Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.
Hello and welcome to the MMQB NFL podcast. I'm Connor Rohr. I've got third grade football head coach Albert Breer here on his way to the Pee Wee Super Bowl. He's calling up second graders, beating the rivals, winning the conference title game. You're on cloud nine right now.
I am. Yeah, I'm actually not the head coach. I'm an assistant coach. Our head coach has done a great job.
Assistant to the head coach.
Believe it or not, he fought through appendicitis. So big shout out to our head coach.
Like Dan Campbell.
Fought through appendicitis, had his appendix out on Thursday, was on the sideline on Saturday. So huge shout out to our head coach, state trooper Sean Finn. He's the man. He's done an awesome job with the kids, and I'm just trying to help out where I can.
You're like the Ben Johnson, Ejiro Evero. You're the power.
I'd be more of Evero than Johnson, if you get my drift on that, like based on my responsibility. So I'd say I'm Evero more than Johnson.
All right. What are we
looking worry,
at,
though, like Sean. No risk that I'm going to get plucked away by another town. At least I don't think so.
Yeah, you're switching it all. It's a 5-2 defense 1 week, a 4-3, a 3-4. It's very versatile. It's an amoebic front.
Yep. Lots going on there. I may or may not just be running my high school defense, but we'll leave that for another podcast.
Hey, everything's cyclical, right? There's a time and a place for everything. Yeah. There's a lot going on in the NFL, too, and I think we want to start with this was the game that I was most excited for, and I took your cue. I learned to put YouTube on my television so I could avoid some of
the absolute
awful. So here's what happened.
That's awesome.
Yeah. All right. Very short story, okay? So I'm watching, everyone in my house is just kind of, my kids are into football now, and so we kind of watch the games together, and I'll take some notes and stuff. And so everyone's crowded around the laptop watching the Chargers and the Lions, and it's this fantastic game. And we're all looking up at the TV, and the Cowboys are beating the Giants by like 63 points. And I'm just like, why is everyone huddled around my laptop? Like, this is 1930, and the first color television set has just come out. So I said, you know what? This is it. Albert told me I need to learn how to put this on the YouTube, on the TV. So I did it.
It's just like downloading an app onto your phone.
It is. Now, the difference between me and a lot of other people is my television is from 2015.
Okay. But that's still new enough. Like, you can still, I think I've got like one of my TVs, a couple of my TVs are actually that old. So I think you still download the app, right? Like you would like out of the app store on an iPhone, right?
Well, we got it. We got the Fire Stick, and then I found out where to plug that in, and then from the Fire Stick, I got YouTube, and then I logged in through YouTube, and but it was great. It was a game-changing experience. I didn't have to watch the Giants anymore. I'm free of that.
The next step is get your TV hardwired to the internet, and you don't need to go to some fan. I learned this when we were after we moved into our house. I learned this through a couple people that you don't need to go to some fancy AV guy to do it. You can just have your electrician do it. Uh-huh. And your electrician, if you have your electrician coming over to whatever it is, something going on at the house, don't be afraid to ask them, hey, do you know how I could hardwire my TV to the internet? They'll know how to do it.
All right. And my electrician's my father-in-law. So, Grandpa, come on
over.
Let's do it.
Boom. Boom.
Come on, baby.
There you go.
By the time the Super Bowl rolls around, we'll have figured out how most of society has been watching football for a decade, which is very exciting.
This is like my full transition into suburban dad, where I'm giving other dads advice on how to rig their TVs up.
Yeah. Do you have any Christmas light takes?
Well, I need to go to you for that, I think.
Yeah, no, we're up. We've been up and rolling for 2 weeks now. It's an absolute light
Clark
show.
Clark Griswold.
Yeah, I'm fired up. Anyway, I want to start with Cleveland and Baltimore. And when you're a network and you look back on the games that you missed, and everybody wants to put the right games in prime time, and you do this and that, like the fact that this game was just like sitting there super lonely at 1 o'clock on a Sunday is such a big miss. Like, what a great game this was from start to finish.
Yeah, and that division is going to be a blast to watch. We got, 3 days from now. 3 days from now, we got Baltimore and Cincinnati, which it's almost a shame that that's on a Thursday night, because you get the feeling like one team or the other might not show up, you know?
Yeah.
Like, so there's always that. But, you know, both those teams now coming off of losses. And, you know, I'm really impressed with the Browns. Like, to fall behind the way that they did on the road and fight back, and to fight through, like, Deshaun playing like crap and getting hurt in the first half, and, you know, what that looked like, you know, after 5 minutes at 14-0. I believe, like, after 5 minutes of the third quarter, it was 24-9. And the way that defense is playing, too. I mean, I did my my midseason execs awards last week, and I think deservedly so. Myles Garrett was sort of a runaway winner for Defensive Player of the Year. I mean, he looks like the best defensive player in football. Their secondary can really play. They come up with the pick six. Greg Newsom makes that play at the end of the game. They can still run the ball, even though Nick Chubb isn't there. And, man, if they can get Deshaun Watson going, which was – he was, what, 14-14 in the second half? Like, you start to see what that team could become. So, I don't know. Like, to me, like, Baltimore, I was borderline, like, they're right there with the Eagles, you know, as the best team in the league, Baltimore coming into the game. And I thought coming into the game, they had the two best wins in the league this year. I think we talked about that, their wins over Seattle and Detroit. So for Cleveland to go into that place and come back twice from, you know, two touchdown deficits, I thought was a real show of where they are as a team right now. And I mean, who knows, man? Maybe they'll be better for having gone through all the weirdness that they've gone through the first 2 months of the season.
Well, you made that point with the Bengals, right? Where you have to essentially learn how to operate without a quarterback, and then all of a sudden everything kind of falls into place. My question is, so, and I'll play devil's advocate slightly. Deshaun was good in the second half. I would say that there were two excellent throws, a lot of well-schemed short passes, and he was using his mobility. He was god-awful in the first half.
Yep,
I think
terrible.
His net EPA was like a -7. And so my thing is, a lot of people christen this like Deshaun's defining moment in Cleveland. Mm-hmm. Do we think that that's
it's a little much, I guess. It's for
talk me out of it.
So,
or talk me into it.
Well,
rather.
Well, I will give him this. You got to give him this, right?
Played hurt.
It's played hurt. It's much harder to play from behind, right?
Yes.
And he was playing from behind. It was on the road. It was against a really good defense in Baltimore. So in a lot of different ways, it checked a lot of boxes. I think if you want to take the optimistic view of it, you can say the type of layoff that Deshaun had from football. Now, this isn't saying anything about the reason for the layoff, because we've gone over that before, right? Like, and obviously there are very valid reasons why he was out of football for as long as he was out of football. But like, if you just take that for what it is, and you look at past history, it kind of like reminds me a little bit of like, remember all those baseball players like 20 years ago, like Chad Hutchinson and Drew Henson and Quincy Carter. And there were all these guys who were really good college quarterbacks and then went to minor league baseball and came back, or vice versa. And like, it always felt like those guys either weren't quite what they had been before and had to take some time to get their timing back, and maybe they never got it back. And so, you know, I think having that long a layoff from having played football, like real football, I think if you want to take the optimistic view of it, you could say it was always going to take time for him to get his timing back, for him to get his rhythm back, for him to get back to where he needed to be as a quarterback. And, you know, I certainly think if you look at, like, again, like the examples of those minor league baseball players, I know it's a weird comparison, but it's like the only thing we really have, you know, where, you know, you had guys taking 2 and 3 years off from the sport and then coming back in. I think you could, Tommy Maddox is another example, where, you know, you could see where it would be like, all right, like maybe this is just him having to deal with a lot of rust coming back off of a very strange couple of years.
I My curiosity stems from, so you needed PJ Walker to take a snap in this game, and then you have Josh Dobbs lighting it up over in Minnesota.
Yep.
Did the team at the very least miscalculate how long this thing was going to take for Deshaun, and maybe not properly factor in the fact that while he's taking his time to learn, he's going to run more, he's going to get hit more, he's going to get hurt more frequently. And to have miracle for me is that this team is in contention with PJ Walker as their backup. Like he's not played well this year at all.
Yeah. And I think it's like, I think you're right to like point at that. Like, and I do think, I think one of the biggest miscalculations was how he would fit into that style of offense, the style of offense they were running before.
Right.
And like, really, I think last year was weird in that you had just acquired this guy and you knew he wasn't going to play for a good chunk of the year. Now, they didn't know how long that would be before the season, right? But you knew he probably wasn't going to play for a big chunk of the year. So you had to build an offense for the other 10 guys in the huddle and whichever quarterback wound up being Jacoby Brissett that was going to stand in for him. And oh, by the way, like, we all talk about these things conceptually, like, all right, like, you know, this is part of a 3-year plan or a 4-year plan. You know who doesn't care about your 3-year plan? Is most of the guys in that huddle. Yeah. You know what I mean? Like, so you have to sell them something that's going to work for them while you're building something that works for the guy that you've invested so much in. And I think because of that, like, everything was really, really sideways last year. And this year, I think they've made an effort to try and build the offense around Deshaun Moore, put him in a shotgun more, give him a chance to see the field more, his back is to the ball less than it was before, and just try to get him playing faster and try to get the ball out of his hands faster. And it's like what Bill O'Brien did for him in Houston, you know, but Bill O'Brien had the chance to fully invest and build in him because it was the only thing that they were building. They're like, all right, we got Deshaun Watson. Now we're building around just him. Whereas for the first year of having Deshaun Watson, you really weren't doing that in Cleveland.
Yeah.
So like, this is the first real shot that they've had to build around him. And, you know, maybe because of the injury that gets delayed a little bit. And again, this is like the pure optimist view of it, but you can get yourself to a point where you say, okay, like, this is them actually hitting the ground running now.
I'm always a truth is somewhere in the middle guy. So mm-hmm. I think that there were the people yesterday, and I saw it from a lot of people saying this is Deshaun's defining moment in Cleveland. I'm an ex Browns fan, and I'm saying, how can your defining moment be 20 of 34 for 213, a touchdown, a pick six, and a quarterback rating below 75? I think you're right. I think the truth is probably somewhere in the middle. And if you get this guy to 90%, I mean, like it or not, but the Browns are probably primed for a deep playoff run here. I mean, this is a really talented
football. It's a really
team.
Good team. And yeah. I'd be most encouraged by the way they continue to run the ball without Nick Chubb in there. You know?
Jerome Ford was 6.3 yards a carry, and it wasn't like he had like that 60 or 70 yarder. I mean, the long was 28. He had a good long run, but you know, they averaged 5 yards a carry as a team. Kareem Hunt was a little bit more of your goal line short yardage guy, but this is a Mike McDonald defense that was going into this game, arguably, you could make the case for either the Browns or the Ravens as having the best defense in the NFL.
Yeah. And if you're playing this way, right? Like, and if you're able to run the ball like this and you're able to play defense like this, you don't need Deshaun Watson to be Patrick Mahomes, you know, like you can get by this way. And again, like, when the defense is scoring the way that they did on Sunday, when the running game is rolling the way that it was on Sunday, you buy your quarterback some time to get his feet underneath him. And now all of a sudden, you know what? Amari Cooper's a better player. David Njoku's a better player. They're getting more out of Elijah Moore. Like, I think there are a lot of good things here. And, you know, if they can get Deshaun back to the point where he's like a bottom of the top 10 quarterback, like, could that be enough for a run in the AFC? I mean, I don't know if it's going to be good enough to beat, like, Buffalo, Kansas City, and Cincinnati in succession in the playoffs. But I certainly think you could make some noise with that formula.
For sure. From one thing that seems to be going well to one thing that seems to be absolutely bottoming out, the Patriots lost to the Colts in Germany. And this was...
Good thing you pulled the ripcord on that parachute when you did.
Oh my God. I know. At first, like right after I, so for those of you who don't know, I picked the Patriots to win the AFC East. I got made fun of a lot on television. Which is now justified. I had to apologize for it on the radio. And my in-laws know about it. It's a thing.
Like, your in-laws know about it?
Yeah, like, it's not just one of these things that I can just keep work at work and keep at home at home. You know, I saw a bunch of my extended family on my wife's side the other day, and they were like, how is that Patriots pick for the AFC East? And I was like, oh my God, like, this made its way out into the world, which was terrifying. Good lesson, though. But I will maintain that I was right about a lot of other things. I think the Jets are going to finish with a losing record. I think the Bills are going to miss the playoffs. I just picked the wrong team. To win the division. Anyway, the Patriots lost in the worst possible way, which is that you bench your quarterback, who was awful. You put in the backup. The backup gets you to midfield. You have no timeouts left, less than a minute to play. You run the football, and then you fake a spike and throw the ball into triple coverage. And after the game, the quarterback says, I can't say what I really want to say about that play, so I'll just say that this is why I did what I did.
Yeah.
It is a disaster there.
This feels like if it wasn't the Patriots, we would be saying like they're on the verge of a mutiny. After what happened with J.C. Jackson and Jack Jones, being late to the team hotel before the Washington game, being sat down for the first quarter of the Washington game, J.C. Jackson not making the trip. They're relying on these guys, right? Trent Brown habitually late, doesn't make the trip. He's hurt, which is why he didn't make the trip, but there are other issues with him. And then, you know, you hear Mac Jones and he's leaving these verbal breadcrumbs all over the place, right? Like, there's what he said. I don't know if you saw what he said after this game, but it was about the Hail Mary, about not throwing Hail Mary at the end of the first half.
I didn't see that. No. What did he say?
So he goes, somebody asked him, like, I think they threw like a screen or something underneath on whatever. It was a throwaway play at the end of the first half, right? They're at like the 45, they're at the minus 45, whatever. And I think they throw a screen and, you know, whatever. It's just an end of the half play. And so someone asked him in the postgame press conference what he thought, like why they did that, why they didn't throw a Hail Mary. And his answer was no clue. I mean, we were 60 yards from the end zone, so you'd think we'd just throw it in the end zone, but I don't know why we did that. And this was what, like a half hour after we all saw him getting chewed out by Bill O'Brien on the sideline, right? And a week after, and I don't know if you caught this, but a week after, last week after they lost the Commanders, someone asked him in the press conference, an industrious reporter asked him, like, hey, it doesn't seem like you're throwing into like the sorts of windows that a lot of other quarterbacks are throwing into. And he goes into, well, I got to do a better job, but that's a good point. And then it's, I got to do a better job, but that's a good question. So there are all of these little verbal breadcrumbs being left all over the place. So you have that with Mac. You have what you mentioned with Bailey Zappe. You have J.C. Jackson and Jack Jones sat down at the beginning of the Washington game for a quarter. You have Trent Brown, who they've had trouble kind of keeping locked in all year. He's their starting left tackle. It's, again, like, if this was a bad team, Connor, if this was happening in Dallas, what would we all be saying?
Right. Yeah. I mean, Dan Quinn would have been in the head coach 6 weeks ago.
Yeah. So, I don't know. Like, so this is what I wrote this morning. I don't pretend to have all the answers. This is a tricky ass situation. I do not fire Bill Belichick in midseason. I think he's earned.
No.
He has earned the right to finish out the season. But if I'm Robert Kraft now, I think I might go to Bill and just say, how do you want to do this?
Yeah.
You know, like, level with him. He deserves that. And just say, hey, listen, this is probably it. You know it. I know it. So I want to make this as dignified as we possibly can. So if you want to walk away now, you can walk away now, right? That's fine. And we'll let Gerard Mayo finish out the season as head coach. And I'm not suggesting that Bill would do that, but I'm just saying, like, leave that as an option. We can make this difficult at the end of the year if you want me to make a decision. Or we can do something where towards the end of the year, maybe we announce it so the fans can say goodbye to you in week 18. You're playing the Jets. That's a home game. And we send you off into the sunset. However you want to do this, Bill. I know there's been a lot of talk about trading him potentially, and I do think that there's still a desire for Bill. I think Bill still has coaching in him. Like, I think in the back of his head, he still wants to coach past this year because I think he still loves it. And I think it's still what he is. But if I'm the Crafts, like, I even offer up the idea, like, we'll let you do whatever you want. We don't need draft picks. Yeah. I think he deserves that, you know? Yeah. And I think to avoid this thing getting really nasty at the end, or Bill forcing them to fire him so he can go somewhere else, I just think it's gotten to the point now where it's like, let's figure this out now. So we're not sitting there, you know, first week of January, like, holy crap, is this awkward?
Here is my pitch. I brought back the old get Bill Belichick a GM idea. And here's why. I think that, I mean, if you take the breadth of his success, okay, missing the playoffs 2 years in a row and being fired feels ridiculous when you take the 30,000 foot view, right? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And like, so yeah, and during, and during the Germany game yesterday, they had the stat that the Patriots have not had a negative turnover differential since 2006.
Yep.
And a lot of that is Brady. Okay. But then you had a positive turnover differential with Mac Jones during his rookie year, Mac Jones when he was spiraling, Cam Newton at the end of his career. Like, Bill's still good. And if you talk to other coaches in the league, which I know you do, The Castle year. Ask some of the best offensive coaches in the league who is the worst person to play against, and it's Bill. And it's not because the Patriots have a bad roster, but the game plan is always really good. Like, he's still very, very good at what he does. And so that's why I just keep thinking.
You can see it at the start of games, Connor.
Yeah.
You can still see it.
Like, 100%.
When they're in their script, you can see it. Like,
yeah.
That they've actually, like, if you look at the last few games, they move the ball. Like, even against, like, the Eagles and Dolphins at the beginning of the year, like, you'd see, like, the first quarter would look okay. And then the other team would, like, catch up to what they're doing. Like, okay. And because of the roster so limited, they wouldn't have answers. They wouldn't have counterpunches, you know? That's the problem, is the roster doesn't allow for it. But, no, I'm with you. Like, he can still coach, no question.
And so if I'm Kraft, I'm saying, listen, Gerard Mayo is going to take this job at some point. When Gerard Mayo takes this job, he's going to need a strong general manager. So I would like to bring that person in now.
Now.
And that person will handle the number two overall draft pick or whatever it is we end up with. And you can piss and moan about it, or you can make it your idea. And you can see if you can take that off your plate and you can just do what you're really good at. Like, isn't that what we all want at the end of the day? Is like, and I understand Bill wanting, deserving, earning the total power, but wouldn't you much rather go out, leaving the Patriots in a healthy place, making the GM hire look like it was your idea, having somebody in there like John Robinson, bring in talented personnel, take that stuff off your plate. Like, wouldn't that, leaving it in a better place instead of it being like fire and brimstone, you know?
You are where I was about a month ago. Like, I thought, okay, bring in a GM, have that GM be from the Patriot family, right? Like, whether John Robinson, like you said, Thomas Dimitroff, Adam Peters, the assistant GM out in San Francisco, he came up in the Patriot system, whoever it is. Like, find a guy who has background in the system, who you can match with Gerard Mayo long term. And then you've got, like, the whole thing would be, we're going to have to restructure when we get a new coach regardless, because nobody runs their organization this way anymore. Like, there's no such thing as, like, the head football coach is everything anymore. So when it's Gerard or whoever else is the next head coach, and I think it'll be Gerard, we're going to have to restructure anyway, so let's just do it now. And Bill, if you don't want to be a part of that, that's fine, but we're going to do that right now, right? I think the issue, like, and there is history for it too. Like, I mean, you know, like Andy Reid, a lot of people don't remember this, like by choice, ceded personnel control when he got to Kansas City. Because at the end in Philadelphia, it was too much. He was just like, hey, you know, I don't want to do all of it anymore. I want to coach. So he went and got John Dorsey from Green Bay and gave Dorsey personnel power. And he does, even now, he leans on Brett Leach a lot. Doesn't mean he doesn't make final decisions, but like he has given up some of that so he can just focus on coaching. So it's not like it's unprecedented with a coach of that stature. Like Andy Reid did it. And it's a little more difficult when you're doing it in the without changing locations, but it would be doable, I think. I just wonder, can you roll this back after this sort of train wreck? Like, if this gets worse, can you keep going? You know? And here's the other thing. Does the Shula record make it awkward?
That's my whole thing, though, right? It's like, and we could do
an entire... 16 wins away.
Which I think you could get... But next year, you would need 24 and 25.
No. Yeah, we because like I think going into the year, we all assumed the last couple of years, everyone has assumed, like looking at the calendar, he's going to break it in 24, right? That's not on the table anymore. Like, I don't think. I think that at the earliest he'd break it in 25, and you'd have to get better for him to break it in 25. So, like, if things don't go the right way in 24, you're right back in this position again. And now he's a little bit closer to the record, and he really wants to break the record, but it's just as awkward. You know what I mean? I don't know. It just, it does feel like, I think if that were the scenario, again, which I would have been fully on board with a month ago, I think I would have to wait for like about a month to see if this turns around at all. To see if they could beat Tommy DeVito and the Giants.
Like, give him this offseason.
In the Drake May Bowl.
Yeah. Give him this offseason with a real GM.
Yeah.
See how it goes. And if he's like, no way, screw you, I have good ideas, then be like, all right, then we pull the lever on plan B. But like, yep. I think there would be a supreme level of regret. Because here's the one thing, and I promise we'll move on after this, is that you put Gerard Mayo in there, and your standard is such that a coach who made the playoffs for 20 years in a row is not allowed to miss it twice in a row before he gets fired. Wow. And so now you're like, okay, Gerard, so, follow
that's
that up.
That's the problem, though, like Connor, is like, you can't do this, but if you had divorced the last 4 years from the previous 20.
Yeah.
Like Bill probably would have been fired on the plane last night.
Yeah.
Because you have the 1 year, the one building year in 2020, the big bounce in 2021, and then regression in 22, and really bad regression in 23. And so in a lot of cases, like that four-year window would get a coach fired. You can't divorce that from the previous 20 years. You just can't.
Can't.
But there is enough there where it's like you look at the roster, and it's like, how many of these guys, like we said this earlier in the year, like how many guys in that roster can you say are going to be there in 2 years or 3 years? Almost none. That's a bad place to be.
It is.
And so it's not just about where they are right now. It's about what the next 2 or 3 years look like and whether you want to continue down this path. And things have progressively gotten worse and worse when it comes to the state of the roster.
From one coach who, I don't know, people were speculating would be fired on the plane, to a coach that I woke up this morning and sometimes things are trending on Twitter and I'm like, oh, why? Yeah. And everyone was saying that, like, why isn't Brandon Staley fired? And I was like, really? That's like, you know, and I get it. I know that there's a lot of unrest there, but that, I mean, probably aesthetically was the game of the week. But again, he's a defensive focused head coach. They give up more than 500 yards total offense. The Lions are healthy again. They're a tough opponent. But what are you making of?
Well, I saw somebody tweet that Ben Johnson should probably pick out his suit for his introductory press conference somewhere in January now, which is probably a pretty good reaction to that one. You know,
I mean, do you think it's an introductory press conference in L.A.? I mean, you know, I mean
sometimes owners do react that way, right? Like sometimes owners do see something and think like, wow, I want that, you know? I don't know. I mean, I think the Chargers have been so perpetually frustrating to watch because And maybe it's just that we all can name half their roster. You know what I mean?
But I think that is a lot of it, you know?
Like, is that we all know the guys in that team, right? Like, yeah. It's like, it's there's no secret how good Keenan Allen is. Mike Williams is hurt, but how good he was. And, you know, Josh Palmer coming along. They draft Quentin Johnston. They have Austin Eckler, Justin Herbert, you know, Rashawn Slater and Corey Linsley on their offensive line. They've had injuries there too. But, you know, it's a good group that's been rebuilt. And then on defense, it's like Joey Bosa, Khalil Mack, Derwin James, like, why aren't they better? And it feels like this has been the story for 15 years with the Chargers, though, doesn't it? Like,
right.
Even with different guys, like, even when you go back to the Phillip Rivers years and how loaded they were back then, and it was like, it for one reason or another, there's been two constants there. It's like, one, they seem to underachieve, and two, I don't know why, but they always seem to be really, really injured, you know? Like, so it's just those, it's why it's such a frustrating team to watch, because you feel like there's a ceiling there where they should be this dynamic team that's, you know, winning 13 games every year. And for one reason or another, it doesn't come together that way. I don't know how much of it's Staley, you know, but certainly, like, I think some of the stuff the Lions did to get guys open in that game, and like the one play I'm thinking of was the kind of throwback play to Khalif Raymond there at the end, where he was, there was no one in his zip code. And like Ben Johnson was able to free one of the fastest guys in the field up to run whatever it was, 30 or 40 yards. And the impact that had on the game, I think that basically put the game away, right? Like that got them close to field goal range. You know, certainly I think there are some big questions to ask about Brandon Staley that are fair ones based on where they are in his third year.
He's at the point now, like when you do the life cycle of Brandon Staley, when you do the life cycle of NFL coaches, where it's sort of like a weekly fight with a reporter at the podium. And, you know, and I can't go. I pick fights with everybody, you know, like my patience is razor thin. I can't imagine what it's like to be an NFL head coach, but doesn't it always kind of seem like it, you know, that's sort of the end, right? Where you're like, you know what? I'm going to just be honest about my record and who I think I am and all this kind of stuff. And I'm going to go out my way. That's certainly the way that Joe Judge decided to go out. There's an argument to be made.
Blaze
that maybe
he's
still there's an argument to be made that maybe he's still the head coach of the Giants. If that, you know, he handles.
Oh yeah. No, I mean like that. I mean, there was a lot of, I don't think he was getting fired until that.
No.
Like, so
yeah, I think that was a game changing moment, but we've outlined it before. Okay, the offense looks really good. I mean, it looks the way it's supposed to look. Justin Herbert threw for 4 touchdowns yesterday. Austin Eckler, like, you know, I talked to Brandon Staley in the preseason about the vision for this. That's working, you know? But when you're a defensive head coach and you have Kellen Moore as your offensive coordinator, we always said this was always going to be tough and complicated. And now it's tough and complicated. And I don't know. Like, what do you make of it? Fire him. I really don't think he can do it. I do think he can do it.
And I think he's smart. And I think he's a good leader. And I think the guys haven't stopped playing hard. You know, I think the logic in firing him in season would be that you want to get a look at Kellen Moore.
Right.
But that's only if you've made the decision that you're done.
Right.
And I don't think that they've made that decision, you know? I think, like, just having talked to Brandon as much as I have over the last few years, I know, like, his vision for the whole thing is bigger than just defense. There's an overall, like, holistic program that he's trying to put together there. And I like a lot of it. But, you know, the optics of this, of potentially a guy who could be your next head coach, coaching the way that he did, and Kellen Moore on offense, and then maybe another guy on the other sideline who could potentially be your next head coach, coach the way he did on the other sideline, and the defense collapsing like it did at the end of the game, obviously that doesn't look great. But I do think that there was...
We all know reality is more complicated than... Right, and I do think that deserves to be said, right? For anybody that's listening that's like, okay, you know... If the offense is doing good, the offensive coordinator must be good. If the defense is doing bad, then the defensive head coach must suck. Like I do, it is far more complicated than that, you know.
Right, and this is sort of, I mean, the context of this game was different too. Like, it just became a shootout, you know? And so what that means is, like, your offense is playing really well. Well, you know, like, then you may be playing with tempo. You may be going on 6 and 8 play drives where your defense is getting right back out there, dog tired. Right. So there's a lot of different elements that can play into it, especially when you've got a game that's being played at the speed this game was being played at. Yeah, I think there are great signs in it for the Lions, to be honest with you, because they've won a bunch of rock fights this year. And this is the way the Lions had to win, like, last year before the defense came together. So it shows the Lions can still win different types of fights. The Chargers, I mean, it's just – this felt like a little bit like the Dolphins game, you know, where they just couldn't get the stop that they needed at the end. And, again, that, like, Khalif Raymond play, 41 yards on the last possession, first play of that possession – you know, for Ben Johnson to be able to dial that up, that's like the optic to me that sticks with me, is like how the fastest guy in the field was able to get the ball with that much space is a credit to Ben Johnson, and also one that I think, you know, Brandon Staley, fair or not, is going to have to wear this week.
Yeah, it's a bad matchup for the Chargers, too, who are just right. not able to defend the run. You get David Montgomery back. Jahmyr Gibbs is finally firing on all cylinders. And, you know, the Lions played fearless. Like, they were like, okay, cool. 4th and 1, we're going to hand the ball to friggin' Amon-Ra St. Brown. Like, it doesn't matter. We're just going to bowl you over. And that's what they did for a majority of that game. I don't know if the Chargers can get tough against the run. I don't think that's something, you know... You know, you can you do what Philly did last year and sign Ndamukong Suh and Linval Joseph and pray that Ndamukong Suh actually plays the gaps that you assign him to and, you know, and doesn't freelance? I don't know. I mean, that's going to be a tough, that's going to be tough cookies, you know? And so you're stuck. And with Staley, I mean, it really comes down to, can you reinvent yourself again on defense and make your calling card something that you're capable of using to carry you throughout the rest of the season? And I don't know if he can.
Yeah. And I think, you know, again, like, it's going to get more complicated as you go, because if it becomes about the optics and what this looks like, does that seep into, you know, how you're coaching on a week to week basis? It's, you know, I have a hard time. I mean, and this looks bad because it's Jared Goff and a Lions offense that is very, like, a very, very capable offense, but I still don't think people should view them as a powerhouse, but don't. You know what I mean? Like, so it's like, so you lost to the Lions in that sort of game, huh? Well, what does that say about where you are? That's not fair, but I'm sure that's part of the thought process for a lot of people that don't follow this stuff as closely as we do, you know, like, where it's, if this happened against the Chiefs, nobody would be talking this way, right? Like, if this happened against the Bengals, nobody would be talking this way. I do think that it happened against the Lions probably subconsciously has people thinking some things that probably aren't fair at all.
Yeah. I mean, the Lions are right now, a top 4 team. Preview of my power rankings. I'm finally going to do it. They've cracked the top 5.
Three teams left with two or fewer losses. The two teams that were in the Super Bowl and the Detroit Lions.
Hot damn.
How about that?
Raiders beat the Jets 16-12 in one of the worst football games I've ever seen. And I've seen some bad ones. I saw a Greg McElroy-led Jets offense. And this was just as bad. And listen,
Zach made some wow throws, and then
that's what I was gonna say. Like, so the last play when he gets the Hail Mary off in the end zone, that throw.
Oh, I thought I thought it was gonna be caught. Like, it looked like Garrett Wilson was gonna come over to the top and catch that.
That throw was ridiculous, and like in that moment, you're like, oh my god, like 6 people in the world can do that, and then what you have to appreciate about Zach Wilson is that, like I don't even, you know what it is? This is the perfect analogy. Do you remember And One, the mixtape tour, The Professor?
Yeah.
Okay. So it would be like if you put The Professor onto an NBA team and they're like, hey, we're running pick and roll. And he's like, cool. And then he just like puts the ball in his shorts and is like dancing around and then like throws it behind his back into the basket. And they're like, dude, no, pick and roll. like pick and roll, pick and roll. But he's in the middle of this game where the team, the offense, cannot move the ball to save their life. Like, he's missing guys. He's not properly throwing checkdowns. And then he just no-looks a pass to Alan Lazard, which is just, like, the funniest thing. It's like, it reminds me, too, of, like... Like, I've young kids in school.
The Jets
right?
should just let him run the offense.
Just like, you know what, dude? Like, it's Johnny Manziel of Texas A&M. Like, whatever you want, pal. Okay, go for it. Like, it can't be worse. And
yeah, it's scramble drill from the snap.
It's almost like, like I said, I have young kids in school, and the teacher would be like, you know, they're just having a hard time, you know, whatever, doing this. And you know they can do it, but then they get into school and then they just get bored and they're just like, yeah. Ah, da, da, da. I don't know if he's bored. I don't know if he's like, he just has all this special ability that he feels like is being wasted. I don't know what it is. I feel terrible for him. I really do. I think the weight of the world is on his shoulders, and but he's so good when he wants to be. He's so good.
It's like, I mean, I've never seen anything quite like it.
There's no comparison.
Like, I'm like racking my brain. Like, is this maybe like what Jeff George looked like, you know, when he was in the Colts, and then he gets to the run and shoot and all of a sudden takes off and like plays pretty well. Right. Like, I don't know. Like, I can't think of somebody who is quite like this, like where it was just like legitimately boomer bust, like not just figure of speech boomer bust. Like, it's like either he's going to make a throw that you've only seen a handful of times, like
in your life. Yeah.
And then he can't like complete a 7-yard slant, you know, like it's the weirdest thing. Yeah. And I mean, there is like a lot of weight on him though, because everything's like, and especially now, like, you know, Rodgers telling the NBC crew, like, oh, I'm going to be ready in mid-December. So now it's like on Zach Wilson to keep them in the race.
I know.
through mid-December, you know. So I don't know. I don't know what to do with the Jets now. I mean, can they stay in it until then? The schedule, to me, like this felt like a little bit, I don't want to say must win, but maybe as close as you're going to get to it in the middle of November, because this was one of the ones that if you look at the schedule going forward, I think they got Miami twice in the next 5 weeks. They got to play Buffalo. It's not easy going forward. Like, this was one of the ones I think they sort of had to have, you know, because it's going to be tough for them to make hay over the next, I think, 5-6 weeks are pretty difficult.
Check this out. Jets Bills next Sunday. Jets Dolphins Black Friday. So short rest against the MF and Miami Dolphins. Jets Falcons on December 3rd, which, I mean, that defense, yeah, the Falcons are taking their lumps. That defense, if the Raiders took Zach Wilson for a ride, that defense is going to give him a lot of complications. Then December 10th, oh, that Texans game looked easy a couple weeks ago. Not anymore. CJ Stroud is a freaking MVP candidate. So that, and then you get the Dolphins again. And then the Commanders Christmas Eve and the Browns 4 days later. Like, that is, that's an awful schedule.
I want like the Jets to make it to mid-December in contention just to see if Aaron's telling the truth.
Like, it's so funny. It's a very Aaron Rodgers thing, right? Where he has probably no reason to have said it and just said it. But now we'll construct a 3D chess backstory to why he happened to reveal this information out of nowhere. But it is...
Well, then and eventually blame somebody else for it.
And then, yeah, just be like, yeah, no, I, you know...
That wasn't what I meant.
Melissa Stark took me out of context. You know, she's one of the good reporters in our business. And it's just like, yeah, okay, yeah, sure. Whatever, I'm sure we'll clear it up on Pat McAfee, you know, but... for $1 million a year.
Such
a
circus.
It really, like, do you think about our job sometimes?
If you think,
about what we do for a living?
But if you think about, like, everything that was going on during that broadcast yesterday.
Oh, like,
Zach Wilson just going out there and slinging it. Aaron Rodgers telling the sideline reporter he's going to be back from a freaking Achilles 3 months after the injury.
It really, like, you know.
I mean, Robert Saleh deserves like a Purple Heart after managing all this.
The last thing
just
I have
think about just think about everything that was happening in that stadium last night.
And then, you know, I was taking my kids to school this morning, and, you know, I get it. You're on, the big New York radio station, so you have to come in with your tough take this morning. And they're like, Robert Saul is too soft to coach the Jets. Too soft? Like, if that happened, like, if the kinds of things that happened to the Jets happened in my family, I might leave. Like, and I love everybody in my house. You know what I mean? Like, I love everybody. Like, but I wouldn't be able to stay. Like,
it'd be all tail lights.
Like, yeah, I'd be Bruce Springsteen in Hungry Heart. Like, I'm just out of there, man. And like, but he is just like,
why is this franchise always in these situations?
Like. I can't remember anybody, and a lot of Jets coaches have put up with some crap, but this is cosmic, like from another world level of bull crap that he has to deal with on a daily basis. And I know, you know, part of it's his own doing and his own choosing. Yeah. And he is naturally a pacifist, but like, my God, to say that he's too, like, this guy is on the edge, you know, like, just give him a break, you know. Yeah.
I think we always have to like grade these things, like, I think we always have to assess these things sort of on a curve, you know. Like, when I was covering the Cowboys, I remember like 7 different guys in the team had their own radio shows or something ridiculous like that. Okay. And yeah, T.O.'s radio show was actually on a station in Miami for some reason.
That's awesome.
And so me and Todd Archer and Calvin Watkins, like, basically, like, had a schedule where we had to, like, trade off who had to listen to it, you know, like, just to monitor somebody saying something crazy. And that was in, like, 2007. So how much crazier this is now, like, and all the stuff that, you know, Robert has to deal with there. Yeah, like you said earlier, I think it's time to give the man an extension.
I mean, listen, I've been through some crazy Jets moments. I've covered the Jets. Everyone knows this. I mean, I was in a locker room once where we didn't know whether Mark Sanchez, Greg McElroy, or Tim Tebow was going to be the starting quarterback, and it was the quarterback's day to talk, so they all talked at once. And if you can imagine just pinballing around the locker room, Tim Tebow's pissed because they said they had a plan for him, and it turns out they didn't. And Greg McElroy's like, yeah, I'm really excited for this opportunity. Mark Sanchez is like, football life is ending, and you're just like, what is happening? I mean, you know, after the meltdown in Miami, after they lost to the Giants, and then the entire, on Baggy Day, the entire team just trashing Santonio Holmes on the way out the door. Like, that's chaotic, but this is, it's
yes,
different.
Did you ever have to follow the tabloids because Jessica Simpson's father might leak more Cowboys information over there?
Ooh, no, I did have to follow Tim Tebow.
So, like, the year I was covering the Cowboys in 07, they were in the divisional round, so they got a bye. So a handful of Cowboys players, led by Tony Romo, for that weekend went to Cabo, which actually isn't that far from Dallas, right? It's like a 2-hour flight. They go to Cabo, and the pictures come out, like, on their, like, while they're on their bye week, that they're in Cabo, and it becomes the biggest story in the country for the, you know, week leading up to the game that they would wind up losing as the number one seed in the NFC to the Giants, who went on to win the Super Bowl. So the rumor had always been that Jessica Simpson's dad, Joe Simpson, had planted paparazzi in Cabo to take pictures of them because he thought it would help raise her profile if she was seen during the bye week with all these guys in Cabo.
Wow. I'm just looking up Joe Simpson. Good for him. Well, he's still around. He's still hanging.
Peak circus.
I mean, so on the flip side of this, let's acknowledge that Antonio Pierce is 2-0 as the head coach of the Raiders. They're winning games with Kevin O'Connell, and I really do think he's got a legit shot at the full-time coaching job.
I hate to correct you there, but Kevin O'Connell hasn't played quarterback in a little while.
Sorry,
Aiden O'Connell.
Sorry, yep. Aiden.
No, but we got a little off the rails there, so you can excuse Connor for stepping in it. But
coins in the fine bucket.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. This is going to be this is setting up for the Raiders as an interesting situation, because if they can be competitive the rest of the way, and if they can get to say 8-9, 9-8, does Mark Davis have to look at this and say, "I made a mistake in not keeping Rich Bisaccia the last time"?
Exactly.
I need to elevate Antonio Pierce permanently. I think that that's an interesting backdrop to all of this, because I do think that there are people in that organization who would say now that they should have kept Rich Bisaccia on board as their full-time head coach.
You keep Rich Bisaccia, you still have Derek Carr in that really good contract. Like, that's basically a year-to-year deal. Mm-hmm. You still have the Gruden offense. You still have a lot of those guys there, and a lot of that infrastructure. People forget, John Gruden's staff had Frank Smith on it, and he's the offensive coordinator of the Dolphins. Now, like, Frank Smith was his tight ends coach. This is a good mm-hmm. coaching staff. Gruden hires good coaches. And so, you know, whatever. Who knows? As far as we know, John Gruden's going to be the next coach of the Raiders. I mean, let's be real.
Can't rule much out.
Is anything out of the realm of possibility?
I don't think so. Jim Harbaugh?
Please do it. Please do it.
That would be great. Please do it. That would be fun.
Texans Bengals 30-27. Just another, you know, I'm not gonna lie. I took a ride on the boat, CJ Stroud for MVP, and here's why. I think that if you're taking it as here's my value to an individual franchise, imagine if CJ Stroud was terrible, and then you wasted two draft picks because
interesting, because when I was doing my I thought this was – I hate to – sorry to interrupt you, but
– No.
This was like – so when I was doing that whole vote thing last week with the executives, right, I had somebody vote for Tyreek. And I asked him for his – like he was like – and then I showed him like the final results. And he was like, oh, so it's just a quarterback award. And I'm like, yeah, you know, it is, I guess. And he's like, well, let me ask you this question. He's like, if you asked his assist – if you asked another coaching staff – who would you rather see the Dolphins? Who would you rather take out of the Dolphins' offense, Tyreek or Tua? How do you think they would answer? And his whole thing was, I think they would answer Tyreek.
He's like, if they had to pick between one or the other,
they would rather pull Tyreek out of the offense than Tua.
100%.
And I'm like, that's interesting. And so I think that's sort of the argument you're making here is like, if you pull CJ Stroud out of the Texans' offense, what do you have?
Well, if CJ Stroud is playing like crap, and let's say through 10 weeks, he's really, really bad.
Or is Davis Mills in there?
Well.
Because that would be the wins above replacement thing, right?
Well, all I'm saying is if he's bad through 10 weeks, you're probably going to move on from the GM.
Yeah.
You have a head coach that you signed to an extra long 6-year deal, and 6-year deals were big for a while in the NFL, and then they stopped being a big deal, and then to get him they had to sign him again, and I think that was unpopular among owners who don't like the idea of paying over, you know, $4 or $5 million for a coach for you know, the 4 or 5 years of the standard contract. So you have D'Amico Ryan's on a long contract, and then like Tank Dell isn't Tank Dell, you know, Nico Collins isn't Nico Collins.
Yep.
None of these guys are who they are. So the roster is perceived as talentless. Like, think about just the complete flip side of where we are now. Like, that's significant. That is a very real thing. And I wrote it, and everybody yesterday was like, come on, you're an idiot. I'm saying he's entered the conversation. I'm not saying that he's going to win. You know, you can make an argument that Patrick Mahomes should be the MVP every year, obviously, and you can make a good argument of that, but like I
don't want to be eye test guy, but I don't want to be eye test guy, but he is passing the eye test with such freaking flying colors.
Sure.
Like the way it looks,
yeah,
like that matters to me, and like how confident he looks back there and how quick the ball's coming out and how tight his delivery looks. And you know, I talked to D'Amico after the game, and I thought this was a really interesting quote from him. I'm going to pull it up now. You know, he said, where is it? So here's what he said. So to be a quarterback in this league, you have to have talent. I knew that he had the talent, but you also have to have the locker room. That's what he has, and that's what sets him apart. All the guys in the locker room believe in him. He has confidence, and he continues to show that. He's got the locker room as a rookie,
yep.
You know? And like for D'Amico to say that, like, this isn't like some, again, this isn't like a run of the mill first year head coach. Like, this is a guy who was like a defensive captain for two different teams, you know,
right,
as a player. And so, like, for DeMeco to say that about his quarterback and for him to empower his quarterback that way, as a guy who understands the way a locker room works at the level that he does, I think says everything. And, you know, like, to me, like, the biggest thing about yesterday was he threw what could have been, I think for a lot of, like, rookies would have been a confidence-killing interception in the fourth quarter, right? And then he goes three and out the next series. And then he makes those throws to Schultz and Noah Brown to win the game, you know? Like, it's just, like, little things like that, like, where it's, like, I don't know. I don't think that that's who C.J. Stroud was 2 years ago. I think that's who he's become. And I think the growth plus the talent, like, the consistent growth plus the talent is what should have Texans fans excited that, I mean, before long, you legitimately are going to have a top five quarterback there.
Yeah.
If he's not there already, like I said, maybe you see him there already. He's playing that well. Like, now, I mean, small sample size, all that different stuff, but he's certainly shown the potential to get there.
For sure. This was, again, I mean, same sort of flavor as last week. I thought what I was most impressed about was the game-winning drive.
Yep.
He threw a perfect pass on first down, and it was dropped. And you're just like, okay, whatever. And you keep going, and you keep making all these really good plays. And I think that there are a lot of weird circumstances. Like, DeMeco did challenge him a little bit by not using that timeout right away when mm-hmm. they completed the pass. He's got to get everybody to the line. He's got to get the snap off. He's got to hit the check down guy on the way to the sideline. All that stuff was really, I mean, this is veteran stuff. I mean, this is stuff where I think if you asked Will Levis or Bryce Young to do it right now, maybe not Bryce Young, but I think even if you, if you asked Zach Wilson to do it, for sure, he'd have a hard time. But if you asked a lot of these quarterbacks
Zach Wilson would run around in three different directions, throw across his body and somehow complete it, or fire a 7-yard slant.
Yeah, yeah. And so it's just, boy, the NFL is just like, thank God. This happens every couple of years, right? We have that conversation about the lack of quarter, like, is the pipeline dry? And then, like, three guys show up and the NFL is like, oh, thank God. Like,
I mean, this doesn't make you think any less of the Bengals, though, does it?
No.
I don't think so either.
No, because the Bengals won the game. Like,
right. I mean, Joe Burrow, like, Tyler Boyd dropped the game-winning touchdown pass.
Joe Burrow threw a game-winning touchdown pass. And so right. It's like, you know, and for everybody that can't deal with, you know, I've seen a lot of pushback lately on, like, sort of the football writer whataboutism on Twitter. And it's like, well, there's wins and losses. I get that. But there are thick shades of gray there. The right. Bengals won that game. They won the game. And I would say,
like, to me, like, what kind of stood out about it too, Connor, is like watching the Bengals play and like how they kept swinging and how Joe overcame the two interceptions. It was almost like there was like a mirror image thing going on where two quarterbacks who are changing the face of what their franchises are, and one's already done it because he's been to a Super Bowl, he's been to two AFC Championship games, but doesn't it feel a little bit like this, I'm not saying stylistically they're exactly the same, but maybe C.J. Stroud is capable of doing for the Texans what Joe Burrow did for the Bengals and, like, just changing who they are.
I hate to relegate that. We're going to start the lightning round here, but I hate to relegate the Vikings to the lightning round because they've won five games in a row. They're just amazing, and Josh Dobbs is lighting it up. T.J. Hockenson had 11 catches for 134 yards and a touchdown. Like, this, the Vikings look healthier than they ever have. And
if you're a Vikings fan, you should feel really good about your head coach. You should feel really good about where your franchise is going forward with your head coach. Remember, they're doing this not just without Kirk Cousins. They're doing it without Justin Jefferson also. They're doing it in a year after they offloaded Eric Kendricks and Patrick Peterson and Adam Thielen and Dalvin Cook. Like, this is pretty remarkable. Like, what they went through the 1-4 dip to start the year. They've won five straight. Now they're back in contention.
It's incredible. Meanwhile, Derek Carr, shoulder injury and concussion. Jameis came in and kind of sparked
yeah,
the offense a little bit. And, you know, I think Dennis Allen kind of tried to tamp that down. Because I do think that there's a lot of, there's a lot of locker room politics. I think you're going to have to play there. And Derek Carr is probably not one of those guys who likes to be called out in a press conference. So,
right.
It wasn't playing lights out anyway. And so we'll see what happens there. I mean, that team is 5-5 and could literally go in both directions in a hurry. You know, I mean,
right.
It makes sense to me to see them.
Although the division they're in gives them a little more cushion, don't you
correct.
Think?
Some other teams don't have that.
Yeah.
Some of the teams don't have that luxury. Steelers 23, Packers 19. It just doesn't matter. Like, nothing matters for the Steelers. Just doesn't matter. Like, they are.
I mean, you know the stats.
They're the anti Jets. They're the anti Jets.
One of my favorite stats in like almost 20 years covering the NFL. Is the Steelers have been outgained in all 9 of their games and are 6-3.
Fantastic.
It is a unbelievable stat. Like, how that happens. Mike Tomlin has done such a good job there. And, I do think they've got some good young players, so I think they're going to get better. But the fact that they can be, like, sort of retooling, you know, and building around young guys and still winning along the way, I think says everything about, you know, why Mike Tomlin is worth his weight in gold as a head coach.
Yeah. I mean, it is just the Packers, meanwhile, it feels like far more of a rebuilding season than I thought it would be.
Yeah.
And I know that Aaron Rodgers struggled in his first season as a full-time starter, but Jordan Love looked really good at the beginning of the year.
Mm-hmm.
He just,
you know, he looked good at points. Like he looked good at points in the Steeler game. Like, he made that throw to Jaden Reed, you know, like that, like, it looked like it could win the game for them. So you still see the flashes. I don't know. Like, I think the Bakhtiari injury.
For sure.
We don't like talk enough about like offensive line injuries, but I just think a lot of times when you look at where teams underachieve, a lot of times you can trace it back to injuries at those spots, and they don't get the attention that an injury to a Justin Jefferson or Saquon Barkley or someone like that gets. But like, it's like with the Giants, like the biggest reason that they are where they are is because of what's happened at offensive tackle for them. It's not even the quarterback, I don't think, you know, although having multiple quarterback injuries definitely changed the dynamic there, but it's because their tackles haven't been healthy and that screwed everything up. And I think that the Bakhtiari injury has sort of loomed over this team for the last 2 years. And trying to get him back and then not getting him back. And now they're shutting him back down. And it's tough for him. Like, obviously, David's a really good guy and has been an awesome player. And it, you know, first and foremost sucks for him. But it's really sort of almost feels like it's held them hostage on offense for a while now.
Yeah. Commanders, Seahawks. There's a lot of good games that were just not, you know.
This game was electric at the end.
It was really good.
Sam Howell played great again.
Yeah. This was a, you know, one of these games too where, like, the Commanders, they used all their component parts. Like, it's not a bad, like, part of me was thinking, like, what if Ron Rivera gets this thing to, like, 8 or 9 wins? Like, what happens?
I
mean, Sam Howell threw 3 touchdowns, no picks, a 109 quarterback rating, and then you have Brian Robinson leading the team in rushing and receiving. He caught 119 receiving yards and a touchdown. He threw touchdown passes to Howell threw touchdown passes to 3 different players. But
the throw to Diami Brown at the end to tie it was pretty impressive, you know. And here's what's, like, really interesting about the Commanders is that they trade Chase Young and Montez Sweat on the same day. That week they go to New England and win. Then they go home. Then they travel back across the country to Seattle and get in this, like, bare-knuckle brawl. And they're there at the end still. Like, one thing you can't say is that this team is disengaged even after those trades. Because, you know, sometimes those trades will be perceived internally as, you know, like the front office raising the white flag and everybody quitting on the season. And I think that coaching staff deserves some credit. Like, the leaders and the team deserve that some credit for keeping that group engaged. And maybe making some of the decisions that Josh Harris is going to have to make at the end of the year a little more difficult.
For sure. Cowboys 49, Giants 17. All the Giants hand-wringing, all the Giants fans, just shut up. Like, everybody's hurt. And the discourse around, I tweeted this and it got a lot of pushback. I was like, what do you want Tommy DeVito to do? And everyone's saying, well, he shouldn't be on the roster if he can't win a game. There aren't 16 quarterbacks in the NFL who can win games. Starting quarterbacks. There's 16 good starting quarterbacks. Everything else is a complete bowl of pasta, and you have no idea what you're going to get. So as a Giants fan, you want three of those guys on your roster? Okay. Show me where that's possible. Anywhere. But
I think it's also like confirmation that the guys like that Joe Shane and Brian Daboll did the right thing and not going all in and not overreacting to last year.
Everybody's hurt. I mean, Andrew Thomas is hurt again.
But indicative like that they, as good as they looked last year, they were still like an off season or two away from really getting the roster where they needed it. And they were able to make it work last year because they had some good injury luck and they got a career year out of Saquon and a clear career year out of Daniel Jones, and the offensive line stayed healthy. And they were able to do some things on defense, but that was a thin-ass roster last year, and they haven't been as fortunate injury-wise. Now you're seeing why they've been more patient in trying to build the team.
No doubt. 25-23, the Cardinals over the Falcons.
Kyler's back.
Kyler is back. He looked good. Nice news for Trey McBride too. Had like
Trey McBride's like one of the quietly most fun players to watch that no one's paying attention to.
Yeah,
like he makes a circus catch. It feels like every week, and there was one at the end of this game too. I mean, we talk about it every week. Last week was the blip in the radar, but they keep playing hard, and they play their way out of getting Caleb Williams or Drake May. That's what's so fascinating about this is Kyler actually has some control over whether or not they draft his replacement, you know?
Here's the other thing too. I just want to mention, and I think it's worthwhile. I mean, you know, just doing some calls about Jonathan Gannon this offseason, what everybody said was, dude, he loves Kyler. Like this, the plan is not to move on from Kyler. Yeah. And you're sitting there and you're going, okay, sure. You just can't say any, you know, but everybody who was talking about Jonathan Gannon this offseason that I spoke to was like, hey, he loves Kyler. He wants to make this work. And who knows? Maybe they rip off a couple.
That scramble he had at the end of the game for a guy coming off an ACL was pretty
impressive.
Amazing. You're sort of reminded the sort of athlete you're looking at there, you know, like his first game back off of an ACL in the fourth quarter of an NFL game. He's able to get away from people like he did. And I don't know, like was that was, I don't think it was like a, it wasn't like 30 or 40 yards. I'm looking at it now. It was at the beginning of that drive. Yeah, it was only 13 yards, but he like reversed field and to make the play that he did there, I thought was really, really impressive and showed that, he still got the athletic ability that he did before the knee injury.
34-3, 49ers over the Jaguars. Niners are back. And anyone betting against Kyle Shanahan coming off a bye, and I understand it's Doug Peterson also coming off a bye, but I think there's a maniacal nature to Kyle Shanahan where I'm guessing there wasn't a whole lot of bye during the bye, and they came out and they just thumped the Jaguars. And I mean, they were healthy, you know, they were healthy again. Trent Williams is there. Trent Williams was like pulling on a block and there were defenders running away from him, you know? And Brock Purdy made one of the best throws I've seen all year where you hit George Kittle on that wheel route with just, a bunch of people converging onto your face.
This is our big offensive line episode, I guess, because I'm gonna say again like how important that tackle position is, and I believe because of the makeup of their roster, Trent Williams is the most indispensable player that they have. Period. There is not a player that they can less afford to lose if they're going to win a Super Bowl than Trent Williams, including the quarterback, including any of the receivers, including any of the defensive players. I think they could sustain a Nick Bosa loss. I think they could sustain a Deebo Samuel loss. They could sustain a George Kittle loss better than they'd be able to sustain the loss of Trent Williams. So I think they did the right thing in being cautious and bringing him back. And you saw in the run game, like, I think the kid they had, Jalen Moore, that replaced him did okay like in pass protection. But, I mean, Trent Williams is a road grader in the run game, and you can see in the way they ran the ball on the Jaguars. A good Jaguars defense, too.
Yeah.
yeah, the Niners just have better players than everybody else. I think that's my takeaway.
I mean, there's not, you know, I mean, it can be as uncomplicated as that, really.
Yeah.
They're a better team. 20-6 Buccaneers over the Titans. Baker Mayfield, playoff Baker, stays alive. This is the only thing I care about at this point anymore.
You want Baker in?
Yeah. Like, right? Wouldn't you?
Yeah, I'm like, the Baker going to like San Francisco in the first round or something.
And
They'd be hosting a game because I think they'd have to win the South to get in. So would they be hosting like Seattle in the first round? That'd be a lot of fun.
Oh, they could do it.
Right, because Seattle would probably be the top wild card, I would think, out of the end. Or the Cowboys. Oh. Baker versus the Cowboys. Oh, that'd be good.
Please.
Baker versus the Cowboys.
Football gods, deliver me Baker Mayfield knocking the Cowboys out of the playoffs in the first round.
But that's like very feasible because the Bucs could very feasibly be the last division winner, and the Cowboys could very feasibly be the top wild card, right? Because the Eagles probably win that division.
Yeah.
So there you have it.
Oh, gosh. I love it. This is perfect. I now have something to hope for. Some of my bigger ideals for this season, like things that I wanted to go down, have just gone out the window. Obviously, the Patriots are out of the playoff race, but Baker Mayfield knocking the Cowboys out of the playoffs. There we go. That's America right there. That's football.
And he's a free agent, so maybe Jerry gets some thoughts about things he wants to do in the offseason.
Now we're cooking with gas. It only took us a little over an hour. Albert, thank you so much for coming on. As always, good luck in the third grade football Super Bowl. We're all pulling for you.
10 a.m. on Sunday, baby. Let's go.
Be there, and be there on Thursday for the Matt and Gilberto Show. Leave us a rating and review. Let us know what you think. It helps us make the show better. Thanks, everyone.
Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.